Welcome to But Why Though, the podcast, a roundtable conversation about all things pop culture. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined this week by Kyle.
Howdy.
And this week, Kyle and I are going to talk about the return of physical media and how the children yearn for the inconvenience. But before we get into that, what have you been enjoying lately? What have you been into?
Oh, man, that's a tough... Well, we did our episode about Dropout. And so that got me to go explore a little bit more from Dropout. I haven't had as much time as I maybe would have liked to go through some of like the really obscure Dropout stuff. But I did start watching a bit more Dimension 20. I've not started Total Forgiveness yet. That is on my list to do next week. But I did listen, or I did watch Nobody Asked, which was as good as I was expecting it to be. So I'm excited to go through some more of these as well. But other than that, I've just been, unsurprisingly, continuing to read an insane amount of books. And I'm doing a group read through of The Lord of the Rings. I do a yearly read through anyway and a rewatch of the movies, but I've been going back through with other people, which I think makes the experience even better, because it's like I might be reading it for the, you know, 70th time. Somebody else is reading it for the first time, and we take away different things from different moments, and that's like such a fun, unique experience.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think especially because having you being the person who has read it more, it's probably, I would assume, interesting to you to see what is jumping out to people who have read it less and like how often they're like catching things that like might have taken you more reads, or the things that they're deciding to put importance on or that they're finding interesting, compared to like you having read it a bunch and being like, oh yeah, I know that happens. This is nothing that, you know, I've read all of the footnotes and the Silmarillion, and, you know, I have all the context for the things that you're looking at. I should do it. I need to find a book club where I need to find a book that I've read significantly more than anyone I know, and then start a book club and be like, let's do this.
No, it's nice because there's little things like last week we were at the part where Frodo's been stabbed on Weathertop and they're going to Rivendell, and in the books it's Glorfindel who comes and gets him, not Arwen. And there's a moment where he's telling him like, we need to go, we need to get you away, and Frodo says, I'm not leaving my friends. And Glorfindel says, well, the best thing you could do for your friends is leave them. Like, you're the one being chased. So if you leave, they will be okay. And that, and in the movie, it's just he's stabbed and he's dying and he's kind of incoherent.
He basically blacks out.
Right. So, but that's a huge difference, because then at the end of Fellowship, when the Fellowship breaks and him and ultimately Sam go away, in the movie, you kind of feel like he just kind of comes to that realization in that moment. Whereas in the book, it's setting this up way further, where now he's been told already, and that idea has been planted in his head, like the best,
like,
thing
you are
you
a
could
danger,
do, yeah. Right? Like, they're coming after you, and so if you leave, your friends will be safe. And then so ultimately, when he gets to the point where he makes that decision, you understand where that idea came from, because otherwise, why would a hobbit feel like going on this quest by himself? That doesn't make any sense. But when you have an elf who's already put this idea in his head, and that's the thing that, like, I've read this so many times, and I hadn't even thought of it that way. And so much of it is just like thinking about things in a different way. Different lines of dialogue will affect you differently depending on what's going on in your life or in the world or whatever. And so that's where, on a first read, you're paying attention to plot points, or a first watch, or a first playthrough. Like, anytime you're experiencing something for the first time, you're focused on kind of the plot points, or like in music, the melody, and you want to know, what is this trying to say to me? And like, what's the main point of this? And then once you're going back, well, I know the plot now, so I don't need to focus as heavy on the plot. Now I can think more about the extra things. And so that's where every time there's something new, even if it's minor, or even if it's a different way of looking at it, that you can take away. That's why I love rewatching or replaying or rereading. Like, I'm a huge proponent of re-enjoying something you've already enjoyed, because you just get a deeper appreciation and understanding of it. And I think that's so much cooler even than just enjoying it the first time.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think the easiest example that I can point to for that is always going to be Arrested Development, which is just a show that only gets richer when you rewatch it, because there are so many jokes that are interwoven before you've even heard the joke. And then watching the show, and you're like, oh, that season two joke started in season one, and it built up for like 8 episodes before we actually heard it. And so you get really weird, interesting interactions like that. But I think also, to your point about things hitting different, like, the easiest example would be Coraline, and how if you watch Coraline as a child, it's a fun adventure movie, and if you watch Coraline as an adult, it's a horror movie. And it's like, oh, that's actually really terrifying and like a horrible situation for a child to be in. But then kids watch it and they're like, oh, it's a little scary, but it's an adventure, so it's fun. And yeah, just the way that like whatever's going on in your life or what roles you have or what relationships you have all can change. I think we see that too a lot with books that, you know, or just media in general that people will watch after it came out, like significantly after, and they're like, I don't get what everyone is talking about. Like, why is this so good? It's just full of tropes. And then you have to explain to them that is where the tropes came from. Like, it's important because right. that is the big thing.
Like, I liked the Game of Thrones. I liked the last season of Game of Thrones. I thought the ending made sense. I didn't think it was amazing. I think it was less than the other seasons, but I thought the ending made sense. I thought it was fine. I kind of saw it coming along the way, but I also watched it during COVID and after I already knew how it ended. So I had a very different experience than people who were experiencing it as it was coming out. And I do think like that drastically changes how we engage with things, because I wasn't engaging with the active social media, you know, brouhaha about it. I was just sitting and watching it and coming at it from a very different perspective. And that whatever perspective you come at any sort of media with, I think has such a profound impact on what you actually get from it.
Oh, definitely. I think another good example of that would be Lost, where I watched Lost as it was coming out. And so I was talking to my friends at school, talking to my siblings, like it was an event to like watch the episode every week. And I don't know if it was a new show and I was watching it, or not a new show, if it was a show I hadn't seen when it came out and I was watching it fresh now, I don't know that I would have the same fun with it, because a big part of that show was like all of the theorizing and all of the uncertainty and all of the, you know, what's going to happen. And it went on for what, 7 seasons? So similar to Game of Thrones, you know, you're invested for over half a decade watching this story unfold. And then how does it hit when you can just go on Netflix and watch a season over a weekend instead of having it drag out for a year? And yeah, I think that it's just a thing to be aware of. I think I've also seen books that are highly praised and it's like, well, it's really good if you read it before you go away to college. And like, then it becomes less profound because it's less relatable or less a thing that you're going to experience the same way. And man, I feel like this could just be its own episode of just how do we engage with stories based on our lives. But yeah, I totally get what you're saying of like, it's just a different thing. And so rereading and rewatching and re-listening is absolutely valuable. Cause also like, I mean, maybe this is with music more than anything. I've gone back to stuff and been like, this isn't for me, or it's not for me anymore, I should say.
Right. Yeah. I do that a lot. It's like a thing that I used to enjoy. That's why there's some things that I enjoyed when I was younger where I'm just kind of like, I don't know if I want to go back through this again. Cause I don't know if I'm going to feel, I'm actually planning a read through of the Ender's Game books with a couple friends. And I enjoyed them when I was in high school. Now that I'm older and I know about the author's political views and other, like, it kind of taints my thought process even just going into it. And so, like, I'm like, man, there's a part of me that's like, this is going to really be a bummer if I go back through these and they're not as good. But then there's another part of me that's like, but there are probably things still that I can take away from it. You know, my big thing is just because a piece of media contains something doesn't necessarily mean that it's an endorsement of it. And I also think like reading about something or watching something doesn't mean you're endorsing a certain thing. Like people will complain about, you know, this villain did this, that, or the other. And so the author then therefore likes this thing. It's like, whoa, slow down.
Yeah, depiction is not endorsement by any stretch.
Right. So like knowing Orson Scott Card, for example, is super conservative. I actually find it funny when I think back to kind of the core premise of that series, which is that like genocide is bad and we should all be more tolerant. Like the hyper militant and homogenous leadership is bad. And so it's like, interesting. It's almost like his own writing doesn't really agree with his own beliefs, which is like weird. So yeah. it's like, that's why I ultimately decided to do it. Cause I'm like, oh, this is going to be interesting to read. And I could be totally wrong. I could be reading through it and be like, nah, this dude is just like straight up trash. Or it's always interesting when you read something where like, I took a very specific message out of it. That was, I feel like a good message. I don't know if the author intended it to be that way, mm-hmm. but ultimately I took it that way. And so there's, you know, it's just interesting. So yeah, I think perspective on how we approach things, I think it'd be interesting to talk more about, but for sure it definitely changes.
You definitely should. And my thing, this actually ties in nicely to the episode, and it ties into your thing too, is public libraries. I, over the weekend, went and volunteered at the grand opening of a new library here in the Portland area, and it was a great time. It's, I think, like 200,000 items that you can check out. There's a recording studio, like, for music in the library that you can reserve. There is, like, a makerspace with 3D printers and laser cutters and all kinds of cool stuff. There's like a rooftop patio there. It's like, it's just a really incredible space. And the thing that I loved volunteering over the weekend for that was seeing how excited everybody was about the space, about being able to come here and get a book and go sit on the roof and read, or getting to come here and like go print some, like 3D print something with their kid. People were excited about, you know, basically everything, checking out books. It's a really cool, it's from a 2020 bond that was passed to kind of renovate libraries. And then this one in particular, they found that it would actually be better to build a new building to serve this part of the city or this part of the area. And so they just built a massive structure and like kind of went all out with it. There's like sensory sensitivity rooms for like people who are getting overstimulated and need to step away, or for, there's one of those specifically for children. So that's really cool. And yeah, it's just a really, really excellent space, and it's a great resource. A lot of libraries now, if you guys listening at home don't know, do have a digital tie-in either with like Hoopla or Libby or something, or Canopy. And so you can get movies and books and music remotely. Like you can just like, I have it on my iPad. I can just read comic books when I want. I can check out documentaries and whatever. And libraries are great. And I just want to recommend libraries to people as my thing this week.
We have a new one opening up by my house in, I think it's like the end of this year. They're already, it's under construction. It's already gone. And I am very excited. We're getting a Barnes & Noble here too, so I won't have to drive 30 minutes anymore to it. But I'm more excited about the library just to have a space to go, and the resources are incredible. So yeah, I could not hype up libraries enough. If you live near a library, go to it every so often. Check something out.
Yeah.
Even if you don't keep it for more than a day, like just making use of those resources, the more you use the resource, the more, like as a community, the more then they can go when it's budget time and it's like they can justify their existence.
Like people are checking stuff out. Yeah.
Yeah. Like they shouldn't have to justify, but they do. And so the more we can support, the more that we ultimately get more libraries or newer libraries or all sorts of things. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's at least, I mean, I know that it may not be the same everywhere, but at least in Portland, they're free. It is just a space that you can go and hang out and you don't have to spend money. And that's amazing. So
it's also
another reason to consider about it. But, then before we get into the episode, I almost forgot this part. Where can people find you online?
You can find me on Blue Sky at Kyle Foley Writes, writes.com.
I like the idea that it would be Kyle Foley, R-I-G-H-T-S, and it's just about you advocating for your rights.
You know how, like, when they say, like, if there's a sign that says, like, don't drink the hot coffee, that there's probably a reason? There is a reason. Yep. I clarify that all the time, because I once was trying to give my email to the poor lady at Barnes & Noble to update my email address. It's probably 8 years ago, and she kept typing, like, I went, and she typed in R-I-G-H-T-S, and I didn't, like, check it, you know, and they're like, oh, can you confirm? I was like, well, obviously, these people are intelligent. And then I wasn't getting emails, and I was like, that's weird. So the next time I went in, I went to go fix it. It was a different person. I was like, I corrected them and said it's the other rights, and I don't know what they did differently, but they still didn't put it correctly. So now I'm just like, I just make sure to spell out the, normally I spell out the entire thing, my first and last name too, but I feel like it should be pretty easy to figure those out.
Yeah, fair. And you can find me on Blue Sky at Most Always Alex, which I'm not going to clarify how to spell any of that because it's all what you would expect. And with that, on with the show. Physical media. So this is just kind of a trend that's been coming back, that's been getting popular, of just like, I mean, like I said earlier, like it's the inconvenient format. It's, you know, people collecting books and DVDs and Blu-rays and vinyl. It's, you know, I think kind of a rejection of streaming has been part of it too, of like, I don't want to have something like handed to me or you know, just like pushed on me from an algorithm. And so you have people who are curating digital libraries for themselves and setting up Plex servers or, you know, setting up iPods or whatever digital audio player they've been able to grab. And personally, I think it's cool, but I wanted to talk about it because I do think it is interesting as a cultural shift after I would say that we're roughly like 15 years deep into like the true streaming era, like early 2010s is when streaming started becoming like viable for most people. So yeah, like 15 years in, people are just like, hey, actually I kind of don't want this. So I wanted to talk about that. So yeah, where are you at with this? Like, do you collect physical media? Do you like have an ethos around like what you collect or how? Where are you at?
So I am big on physical, specifically for books and movies. My movie collection is not as big, but a lot of it I move, like when my parents built their house in 2018, I took a lot of my movies over to my dad because I had already digitized them. I have a Plex server that I use now, but I was previously just like had them on a hard drive and would watch them. But most of my movies are over there. Even now, like I just got the Japanese 4K version of Godzilla Minus One, which has like a cool little like art book goods and things like that that were only in their like version. It's on my shelf for now because I think it looks cool and I'll probably rewatch it digitally, but then I'll take it over there and store it there. So, but the movie collection is maybe not quite as big, but I am, as I sit here and look around, I am surrounded on all four sides by books. The last time I counted, had about 1,200 books, and I have added easily another 200 in the couple years since then. There's something about like just picking something up, and I use an e-reader. I don't use streaming services, but I will watch things on, you know, I use Crunchyroll for work when I'm reviewing a show. Like I'll use things like that. I have a couple for live sports that I'll use, but I'm not a, like, I don't have Netflix. I don't do those things. I just like the idea of, I have this thing, it's here on my shelf, and if I want to introduce it to someone, I can just go, hey, here it is, go watch it, read it, whatever. But yeah, I'm it's just tangibly having something in your hand just feels nice. And so I do that, even though, like you said, it's not convenient, it's way more expensive, it's way more of a hassle to do, but I just love it.
Yeah, no, I get that. I think there is something about like the tactile part of it. Like, I, from where I'm sitting in my office, I can see books, I can see cassette tapes, I can see DVDs and Blu-rays, I can see VHS tapes. The only thing I can't see is like my books are in another room and my vinyl is in another room, but I definitely am like very much I don't know that I ever really stopped collecting things physically. I definitely did, you know, lighten up on it when streaming was more viable, because there was a sweet spot where most things were on streaming and it was reasonably priced and all that. I don't think I ever fully stopped. But I'm kind of right there with you, where it's like, there are things that I have physically, but if it's streaming, I won't necessarily watch my physical copy. That's sometimes it's a convenience thing. Sometimes it's a quality thing. Like there are movies that I only have on VHS or that I only have on DVD. And so if I can stream it in 4K, that might be a little bit better image quality or a little bit better sound. I think for me, a big part of it with like a personal library, and this has been my stance for a while, is that if you have a personal library, if you're doing it well, you're forced to have taste. Whether or not you have good taste or bad taste, that's subjective, but you are forced to make decisions about what you want in your collection, like to curate. Because like you said, it is the more expensive option. I can't buy every movie that I've seen, but I can choose which movies I liked enough to think I need to own that for myself. Like I need to just have that available. And I feel like streaming honestly has kind of sanded off the edges on that one. By making everything available, there's like less of a pressure to choose or to, I mean, not that people don't have preferences, they do, but, it's significantly less than you used to have for like, you know, going to your friend's house and seeing, well, what movies does your family own? And then if they're missing something, it's like, well, let's get in the car and go to Blockbuster or whatever. That's all long gone. It's like, well, what streaming services do you have? 3? Cool. We have 10,000 movies to sift through and find what we're going to watch tonight. And I think also like, you know, trusting algorithms or willingly or unwillingly, you know, just opening Netflix, seeing something promoted and watching it, also kind of removes the idea of you like needing to have taste. So for me, I think a big part of it is I appreciate that I am thinking more critically about what I have. Cause I also have things that I'm like, that's objectively not a great movie. It's just one that I enjoy. And so it's in my library, or that's a TV show that I thought was funny, so I'm going to have it. But yeah, I think it's just an interesting little, like, it's always been a fun look into what someone likes, to like see their bookshelf, to see their movie collection. Although there have been people who have met where I'm like, I do think you buy every movie you've ever seen because you have just about everything. Or I know people who it's like, oh, you have every Disney movie or every Pixar movie. And it's like, you know, it's an expansive collection. You're not having a lot of like, you're not discriminating between those things. But what this tells me is that you like what Pixar does. And now I know something about you from this. So yeah, I think for me, I never really stopped collecting, and I've always thought it was an interesting way to get to know people, or to kind of like know yourself a little bit, to like look at what you've bought and evaluate things. I think for me, it's also just that, like, if I buy it physically, it's a lot harder to be taken from me. Like the distribution rights don't lapse on a DVD. I just get to have it. And that also to me is really important.
Yeah, that's such a huge thing that it's why I got back to doing like physical games whenever I can. Because it's like there was just not that, and I've never had a game that I play get revoked or things like that, but it's just the principle of A, I don't want to ever try to go enjoy something and not be able to because I can't find it or there's no licensing for it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And B, I want to be able to share the things you talk about, like the personal collections. It's such a testament to kind of who you are as a person. So the types of movies or games or books or whatever that you collect, it is like you said, because you're having to be picky about what you're spending the money on. Like, you're buying things that are at some level a reflection of who you are. So there's the twofold to that I really enjoy. There's the one of being able to share that with people. If I'm like, hey, I really enjoyed this book, like I'll bring it to you next time I see you. I'd love for you to read it. Or, you know, oh, I've got this game that's really fun. Why don't you check this out? I think there's something that's really important to that prior to streaming was so big, even just the idea of like having rental stores and being able to go get physical, like the idea of being around the human engagement side of it. There's also the side of I have things on my shelves that are just very meaningful to me. My Lord of the Rings books are always really prominent and really visible because they mean a lot to me. It's my favorite series. I go through it every year. My dad goes through it every year. We like to talk about it. We've been to New Zealand to go see the areas where they filmed. Like that is such a special place in my life. And when I look up at, I have the books up on the shelf above my desk, and right next is a little figure that I got from the Weta workshop when I was in New Zealand. And I look at those and I can think back to why those mean so much to me. And it's such an underrated thing about having physical media, is it's a reminder of where you were at when you first enjoyed it. So there's different things, whether it's a memory of a grandparent or a friend or somebody you just haven't seen in a long time. Like there's that, like, oh, you know, this was so-and-so's favorite movie. Like, we watched this together and that was really cool. And I think that's such a, not that that should be like the biggest reason to go collect things, but that's the thing about being able to, you know, if I'm going to go pick up a case to pop out a DVD or a game and put it into my PlayStation, just that act of engagement and that thought process, and it gives you more of a literal, tangible connection to both the media and the experience that you had with it in a previous time. And I think that's something that you lose when you're just going through Netflix's crummy UI, and or you're just seeing all the algorithmic slop. Like, there's no connection. Even when you do see something that you know, you just scroll right by it because you already know what it is. And so I think that to me is such a cool, like, even now as I'm saying this, I'm looking up at my shelf and I'm seeing different things, like my copy of The Princess Bride, both the DVD and the book. And like, I can tell you now about the first time I watched it. I can tell you about the time that I told my Drumline friends in high school that it was one of my favorite movies, and they made fun of me because they didn't know what it was. They just, the name Princess Bride. And like, I remember that conversation, and that was 16 years ago. Like, it's such a unique thing about having those physical reminders that I think is also really, really special. And then being able to share those with other people tangibly is why I like it. And it's, I imagine, why so many young people are moving to that too, is they want to have a connection to the things that they're enjoying. They want to have that personal kind of feeling. And this gives you that in a way that, you know, going to a used bookstore, used, buying a used DVD, like that, you're just, there's stories to that, that even if it's not at the forefront of your mind, it is there, at least in the background.
Oh yeah. And I think too, there's like, to me, it's, so there's the one part of like, you buy the things that you like because you want to have them, you want to hold on to them. And I think part of that for me too, with movies, is I feel like movies and specifically special features, that was kind of the closest people ever got to understanding the creative process from the outside, because it would show you all of like the, you know, behind the scenes of, this is all the, you know, people understood the artistry of the work that went into the special effects or the puppetry or the costuming, or, you know, just how physical the stunts were and all that stuff. So for me, it was, yeah, it's like you own these things, you have a connection to these things, and then you deepen your connection to the thing by understanding it better. And I accept that that doesn't appeal to everybody. Some people just want to watch a movie to be entertained mindlessly, and those are probably not the people who are collecting media, but I think when you do collect and engage that way, it does enrich the experience. Like, I know plenty of people who have probably never watched a commentary in their life. I think on the movies that I really care about, I love watching that commentary. I don't know that I would fire up the commentary for a movie that I either don't care about, or when the commentary is done by someone who wasn't that involved in the movie. A good example, and this is not to knock the person who did it, there was recently a 4K remaster of the Ninja Turtle movies. I talk about Ninja Turtles on this podcast more than I should, but there were two commentary tracks, and one was the director and one was a comic book expert, two separate recordings. And I've watched both of them at this point. And the director, it was really interesting because you just got all these weird insights into what the production process was like for this small indie film to partner with Jim Henson Studios and make a Ninja Turtles movie. And then the comic book expert, it was one, it was geared toward people who maybe don't know as much about Ninja Turtles, because a lot of what he shared, I was like, this feels like basic facts. But it also just was like, well, I'm just learning about the turtles. I'm not learning about the movie. And so for me, that was a little bit of a disconnect, where it's like, no, I want to hear like all the weird, you know, like one of the things that I learned in the commentary was that the Jim Henson Company tried to tell them to not do any close-up shots because people would be able to clock that it was a puppet. And the director was like, well, what if we just make sure that the eyes are wet? Because that's kind of the giveaway that it's a puppet, is when the eyes don't look real. And so they, like, on set were constantly putting, I think, like, glycerin or something on the eyes of the puppets to make sure that when they did close-up shots that it would sell. And I was like, that's really cool. I didn't think about that. And now I know something new about this movie that I really like. But all I have to say is, yeah, I think it's a way to connect with things, both, like, with the media and with your relationship to it. Like, I was at a garage sale and saw a DVD copy of Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and I watched that movie all the time in high school with my friends, but somehow don't have a copy because someone else in my group had a copy. So I immediately bought it because I recognized that that was an important movie at one point in my life that I would like to have. And I think, like you were saying too, of like being able to like give things to someone, be like, here, I liked this, I think you'll like it too. I think media is something I enjoy. It's for entertainment. It's for learning. It's for growth. It is also for social purposes, for, you know, showing people fun movies or you know, introducing them to ideas or whatever that they might not have considered on their own or might not have found on their own. You and I talked off mic before the show about books, and it was like, oh yeah, here's a book that didn't really click with me. And then, you know, me being like, well, here's why I think you should try it, because this is what sold me on it. And being able to have that relationship and that connection with it through media. Now, I don't know that this is why physical media is making the resurgence that it is. Part of me thinks that it's purely just like we want to own stuff. It's a little bit, I think, goblin brained of like, we just want to collect it. Especially with how many people are like, doing, you know, here's my new album, it comes out in 5 different vinyl colors, pick your favorite one, or, you know, here's a book, if you go to this place they have this dust jacket and this one has that. Like, there's all sorts of like reasons that try to get people into it, into buying stuff and collecting stuff, which I sometimes can go for, I sometimes can't. I remember seeing a Game of Thrones box set, and it was seasons 1 through 5. And this was when we knew that there were going to be like at least 3 or 4 more seasons. And I was like, why would you buy a box set that's not complete? Like, this doesn't sell me. But for people who are collecting or who just want to buy it and get up to speed and then start the show, that's who that's for. I think the interesting thing to me with, I guess, to bring it back around to the main idea of like, why is this appealing to youth, is that it does symbolize disconnecting from, I guess I'll say, the powers that be, like the like algorithms and major players in streaming spaces. And it's sort of taking power back. That feels like a very dramatic phrase to use, but I think establishing your ownership over what you're going to choose to consume instead of having it fed to you is maybe part of it. And to not feel like somebody is constantly trying to sell you something is another nice part of it, at least for me. Like I can put in a DVD and just watch it, and there are not ads every, you know, 30 minutes or every 15 minutes or whatever. But yeah, I mean, do you have any insights on that or any thoughts? I know that you work with younger people than I do. I work with almost exclusively people who are 30 and older, so I don't have quite the conversation opportunity.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, a lot of the conversations I have with like younger people, it there's been a real big shift lately towards piracy, which is a whole different kind of conversation that I think is where they're more in the like the lack of ownership and things like that. The bigger thing, though, that I think is interesting, and I don't have a firm answer on how much of a case this is, but a lot of it, too, is just that hype of, well, other people are doing it, and now I want to do it. Like, I think there are people who, at least initially, I think especially for those of us that are older and grew up with physical things, it's important to us. I do think there's also an element, though, of, like, if, and it's a question I'm going to ask them now because I'm genuinely curious, but this idea of, oh, well, you know, I saw this video on, you mentioned, you know, this vinyl's, it's coming out on vinyl in 5 different colors, and you see a TikTok or an Instagram reel of somebody with it, and then you're like, oh, well, now I got to have it because it's like the cool thing, which is, I'm sure, a big driving force in why it became popular. Maybe not in why people decide to collect, but in why it became so popular, which I look at that and go, eh, you know, there's worse things to be doing because of peer pressure. If you're buying physical things because of peer pressure, like books and movies and things like that, you know, there are worse things to do. But I feel like the vibe I get from the younger generations is it's less about making a statement or anything like that, and more of just like, you know, other people are doing it and I want to do it and it looks cool to have on a shelf. But I don't know if there's any more deeper thought than that.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that. Also, the it's nice on a shelf thing is making me realize how many people I've seen like post pictures of like, they like photos that I see of modern living rooms. There is like, there's always a TV and it's always gigantic, and then there's very rarely like a rack of movies nearby or something. And maybe that's a culture thing, I don't know. I feel like when I was a kid, we just had a rack of VHS tapes in the corner. Not like prominently, just like, yeah, we're gonna have these accessible because that's where you watch them. And so yeah, now I'm realizing like how many people I've seen where like their photos of their homes almost look like stock photos, where I'm like, this feels like no one lives here. And one of the things that's missing is like movies on a shelf. All of my friends are nerds. They always have books on shelves. Some of them have movies on shelves, not all of them, or they have very, very small collections. And yeah, I just think it's an interesting point that you bring up, though, of like, it might not even be about any of these like deeper meanings that we're outlining for ourselves. It might purely be, other people are doing it, so I want to do it as well. And I guess my hope would be that by participating, people are kind of catching on and realizing that it's, you know, the benefits to owning it. Because I think there's plenty of downsides, and we'll get into that. But it is, you know, to some degree nice. Like for me, part of it is that it's and this is way later in the notes, but I'll just say it now, is that it is an anti-censorship movement to own something. Like my book cannot be edited. My DVD cannot have an episode removed. Not to say like I want things that are controversial, but just like I want things the way that they existed. I think there was even as far as the experience of watching it, when people realized that syndicated TV shows were being sped up or having jokes cut, specifically so that they could play more ads. And it's like, oh, well, that's, I mean, the show is already making room for ads, and you feeling the need to speed it up and also cut jokes short to cram in more ads makes it feel even further from the creative vision than it already was, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think, I mean, doing it well, and you were saying piracy is a part of the resurgence, is just like, I'm going to download whatever and just have it and make my own collection.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it too is just, it's so expensive to
buy. Well, that's what I was going to say is, I get that as a response. Like I have bought albums on vinyl where I knew that I was getting it on vinyl. I was happy to get it on vinyl. And then I'm like, well, that was $35. Why does that not include a digital download code? Like at bare minimum.
Yeah, no, it's that. And then if you want to, let's say something is on streaming, let's say I'm going to stream it and I'm going to watch it on Netflix. Well, Netflix raised their prices, Disney Plus raised their prices, or whatever. Like, everything just keeps getting more and more expensive to consume. And the thing that is, it's so challenging, because if you want to watch something, you want to enjoy something, there's not always an easy way to do it. And I think that's, mm-hmm. So that's where people get to, like, listen, I can't afford to go buy this thing. That's why we talked about libraries earlier. I think libraries are such a useful resource, but there are places that don't have libraries or don't have good library systems. Like, there is, I will not personally judge someone who is pirating. While I think it's better to be buying things and supporting creatives, like, I think that should be a priority, I also understand that we live in a world where it can be really hard to afford things. And I think, A, the tangible monetary effect is probably not as drastic as people would make it seem. But I also think, like, it's okay to find, you know, if you want to go enjoy something and find something to enjoy, like, am I endorsing it? No, but I understand it. I understand what drives people to do that. But that is part of why I think, when you do see physical stuff, a lot of used bookstores in my area have really started to grow popularity again and have started to build back up. There's been a lot of, like, little pop-up things, a lot of the little free libraries, like, where you mm-hmm. can do the physical without paying the full price. I mean, I stopped shopping at Barnes & Noble about a decade ago because it was cheaper to buy things on Amazon, and I didn't start going back to Barnes & Noble regularly again until probably a couple years ago, because I was like, I started to understand why it was cheaper on Amazon. Like, that was intentional. They were trying to undercut bookstores. Like, and the Barnes & Noble I went to growing up as a kid closed down, and that was devastating for me, even though I had stopped going there. And I had to realize, like, oh, I'm part of that. So it's hard then for kids that are growing up, that it's like, man, owning physical things can be hard, but it is easier to get your hands on some secondhand stuff. And so I think that's where basically you get a lot of that, and then you get a lot of the otherwise, well, if I can't afford it, I'm just going to find it online somewhere for free. And, you know, it's a bummer that a lot of the creative talent that gets put into these works, like, is not getting the money. You know, it's not like the money Netflix made was ever going to these creatives anyway, mm-hmm. unfortunately. Like, so it's such a mess. It's become such a mess. And so I think people are reverting back to physical in one way or another because of how simple it is. And I think that's...
Yeah, that too. It's I have this movie, it's on the shelf over there, let's watch it, versus I know this movie exists, let's look up where it's streaming. Oh, it's on Amazon. Open up Amazon. Oh, it's only on Amazon if you have Paramount Plus. I don't have Paramount Plus. We're back to square one. That sucks. I had that experience like a week ago. And yeah, I think there's a simplicity to it. I think also, I mean, like you were saying, like, prices just keep going up on streaming. And even there are times where I will see something that I'm like, I want to watch this movie, and I see that it's on streaming, and like the only option is to rent it for like $9. And I'm like, this is a movie that came out 30 years ago that nobody really knows or likes. And that, you know, it doesn't need to be that expensive. It's not that in demand. The idea that it would be that expensive at this point is a little bit absurd. But that's what it's streaming for. And so, yeah, people are like, yeah, I'm just going to go pirate this, because why would I pay $10 to watch a 30-year-old movie that nobody, you know, that no one knows about or likes? And it's because whatever company that owns it decided to set that price. And I think too, with piracy, like, for me, the biggest case for it is anything that the copyright owner is not actively making available, I'm immediately like, I do not care if people pirate this. Like, if, and I know that that comes up most with games where it's, you know, old ROMs from the Super Nintendo or whatever, and people are, you know, the companies that own those games are constantly trying to get those sites shut down, but very rarely are they trying to make those games available. And so it's like, so you're mad that we are getting this thing that you own, but you're not trying to even sell it to us, when the fact that we're trying to get it should indicate to you that there is some buy-in, there is interest. And so, yeah, you just end up in a weird spot. And I mean, same with like old obscure TV shows where the only way to watch it is like some random YouTube upload of somebody's VHS that they recorded off of TGIF in 1994, because nobody put it on streaming. And so, yeah, it's just, I mean, like it is, I think that maybe the thing that we're drilling down to is that the push toward physical is, it's reactionary to the climate that we are in with media now, where everybody is trying to get your dollar. And if they can't get your dollar, they're just trying to make sure that you can't get it. Yeah, it's just such a weird spot to be in. 'Cause I think for me, like, I went through a phase where I, like I was saying earlier, where I was content with streaming, and so I wasn't buying as much. And now I'm looking at them like, there are things that I should have bought because now they're like hard to get. They, you know, they didn't print a ton of copies of that movie, or the disc is only printed on demand, so you're going to get like a not great copy. And yeah, it's just it's an odd spot, but I the more I'm thinking about this, I do think it's purely a reactionary thing. In general, I think, like we dialed in on with youth, it's more everyone's doing it, and I'm just hoping that they start seeing the benefits of everything. I think the other downside too is, like, I mean, it's not just that it's an investment, it's that it's an ongoing investment, because there is always new movies and new music and new books and new video games, and so you are always buying something new if you're going to commit to like building out a library, which I think goes back though to the very first thing I said of like, this is about establishing taste and having an idea of what you like and what you don't like. Because I can't buy every game that comes out. I can buy the games that I like or that sound interesting to me. I can't buy every movie. I can buy the movies that I like or that sound interesting. And I've done that. Like, I've bought movies sight unseen because I'm just like, it's not streaming anywhere and the rental price is $20. So I may as well just buy a copy physically for $20 if I really think that I'm going to like this. Yeah, I think it's interesting in the way that it has come up, because technology is, and there's obviously some exceptions here, I would say it's pretty close to like as good as it's ever been in terms of like internet speed and like the stability of streaming videos. Like, I remember going on YouTube and like hitting, or not even YouTube, I remember pre-YouTube internet, where you would hit play on a video and it would stop and buffer, and you would like pause it and leave for 30 seconds. You would pause it and leave and wait for the next 30 seconds to load, and then hope that it loads the rest of the video before you get to those parts. So yeah, it's like the technology actually, in theory, is the most enabling it's ever been as far as being able to access media. And then there are so many cultural and financial gates in the way to prevent people from engaging in that to its fullest.
Yeah, for sure.
Although, I mean, I guess on the flip side, we have, especially with vintage media, people driving up the price, just like reselling on eBay and stuff, or people, you know, clearing out a Goodwill of all of its VHS tapes to resell. Because there is definitely stuff that I've looked for that, again, this is an old thing. It matters to me because I saw it as a child. No one else is really after this, but because it wasn't popular to begin with, there's not a lot of them. And so people are like, well, if it's rare, it must be valuable, rather than it's rare because nobody really likes it. The flip side of that, things that are price gouged because they were popular, for, you know, and failing to remember that, well, because this was popular, it means that a million copies sold and I have one of those million. So why do I think it's worth $50? And then, you know, the specialty equipment, like there are a couple stores in Portland that have started selling old CRT TVs, and, you know, noting like what doesn't work on them, or selling old VCRs, and same thing of like, yes, this works, but the, you know, the play button sticks, or boom boxes, and saying like tape deck A doesn't rewind, but tape deck B does. And it's, you know, the resale is always tricky because it is, you know, you're creating a middleman that didn't need to exist, but also that is adding another layer of, you know, people trying to engage in these older media formats, adding another layer of difficulty. So I get, maybe what I'm getting to at this point, I'm realizing talking myself in circles, is that streaming has a bunch of gates that are shut or hard to get over, but so does old media to some degree. I don't know how many of my friends have a CD player that is not the one built into their car, for example.
Yeah, I think it's the only one I have. I was trying to think back to see if I had my old one from when I was young. But I used to, when I was learning how to play drums, I had a CD player that I would connect up headphones, and I had like a 3.5 millimeter like extension thing for my headphones. It was such a weird setup. But yeah, I think we got rid of that, but not now.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, you're right. So much of it is like there's limited ways to experience the media in its original form. And so you are, like, if you're doing, you know, I think movies are a good example, like the original format of, or like an old show. Like, I remember when they did like the, oh gosh, I forget which show it was now, but they recently did like a 4K release of a show that was like, it was just zoomed out. And so you were seeing like the boom mic operators. I want to say
it was that Buffy?
They might have said that. There was something with Mad Men where there was like a
oh, I've heard about that. Yeah, that they changed the aspect ratio, forgetting that the aspect ratio was hiding like crew members.
Right, like it was for a reason. And so being able to experience things in their original form becomes harder too. But it is. There's upsides and downsides. The upside is to streaming or to more modern things is that it's more accessible. The downside is that, you know, you can't always find anything, everything. But then the flip side is if you're getting the original stuff, you know, the downsides are that it's more expensive. It's especially to get working equipment. And you have people that hold on to something that might have been one of a million, but because it was one of a million back when it was out and people were getting rid of it, they just threw it away, or they give it to Goodwill, or like so many of those things don't maybe exist anymore, which is why now to have them is so much more expensive. So it just becomes a nightmare, which I guess is to be expected in a world where just consumerism is what it is and everything is a nightmare, which sounds like, I hate to boil it down to such a downer thing, but it's none of it is existing in a way that is favorable to the average person just wanting to enjoy something. And I think that's a real bummer.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, the environment, like the consumerism of it all is absolutely a thing. Like, you know, I mean, how many DVDs have you seen in your life that are anniversary edition, special edition, collector, limited, you know, bonus content, unrated? Like, it's like the same movie released 8 different ways. And in on the one hand, I get that you're trying to, you know, drum up sales. And on the other, it's like, just put it all on one. Because what you've done now is like, there are very few people who are going to buy multiple copies of this. Vinyl, I think, is also another one. And I'm going to point a big finger at Taylor Swift, because I know that she will release an album in like 8 different colors and they'll be retail exclusive. And then I'm going to point a big finger at Taylor Swift fans who then are like, well, I'm going to buy all of them. And it's like, you don't need that album in 8 colors. You need a copy of that album to listen to. And that's it. But for whatever reason, it's, you know, it's again, goblin brained. We're just collecting things to collect things, which, like, I don't have a lot of room to talk. There are things that I own multiple times over for various reasons, but I recognize that that's not a great practice. I think it's also, you know, we blame capitalism on the show like every other episode, if not every episode. And that's very much what this is at play, is, you know, people saying, well, kids are buying vinyl. How can we capitalize on it? I was at a record store and there was, it was the soundtrack to Wicked on vinyl in like 3 different colors. And then also a Wicked turntable and a Wicked slip mat. And I'm like, I don't think anyone likes Wicked enough that they're going to buy all of this or any of it. And that didn't stop it from existing. I'm sure there's someone out there who will buy all of that, but it's just a really weird spot to be in where I feel like we are at this point in human history where it is so hard to enjoy something without somebody trying to make you pay for enjoying it.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I think it is cool that, you know, even if the guidance or the reasoning is a little different, that people are getting back into physical media, and I'm hoping again that they'll learn all those lessons of why it's cool and why it's useful. But it's also frustrating that as soon as that got a little bit of traction, suddenly it was like, well, okay, let's really pump this and get as much money as we can out of it. And it's like, no, just like let people enjoy stuff, let people get stuff. And also, like, maybe, again, don't print 1,000 editions of the same thing over and over again with no actual changes to the content. I know last week My Chemical Romance announced a deluxe version of their album Danger Days, but they remastered it and they included like 9 rare or unreleased tracks with it. And I was like, all right, I already own Danger Days. That is enough that I will buy another copy. I might just get a digital copy to get those extra songs, but like, that's more worth it than if they just were like, hey, it's the anniversary, you can buy it in stores again and get a new copy instead of a used one. That would mean nothing to me. I wouldn't go for that. But yeah, I don't know. It's just it's a weird spot. I'm glad that it's happening. And I do hope also that it has the effect of people establishing their own taste, like more than anything, of all the reasons that having your own stuff is cool, is like not being dumbed down into a monoculture where you're told what to like or what to watch or anything like that, but that you have your own taste and preferences. And again, not that people don't have that now to some degree, but I feel like, and tell me if this makes sense, I feel like the world used to be a lot spikier with that kind of stuff. I feel like people used to have stronger preferences. Maybe I'm being optimistic, but I feel like there used to be more unique media coming out and more unique taste from the people who watch it and listen to it.
I mostly agree. I don't have a hot enough. Like I'd like to think that that's the case.
Yeah. I think it's mostly when I see, like, because there is still the water cooler show. Like, I didn't watch the last season of Stranger Things. I know a bunch of people who did. And so they, you know, they all watched the same thing. They all talked about it, yada, yada, yada. But I think maybe I'm thinking specifically more with like music and movies. I feel like TV shows are the one thing where monoculture kind of happens because it's such a commitment to watch it that you want to watch what other people are watching and be able to talk about it. But yeah, I think it's just a, it'll be interesting to see what habits people keep from the streaming age as they try to revert themselves to a more analog, inconvenient age. And we didn't even touch like too much on the inconvenience of it. Like we got into it a little bit, but there, to me, like with music especially, I have all of my music that I like loaded onto my iPod. And so I have it about as convenient as I want it, where I just have to pick what I want to listen to, but I don't have to get up and go get it. But I do wonder how much the inconvenience is either helping or hurting that movement of physical media. Like, do people like the inconvenience of having to get up and change out discs when they're binging a TV show, or do they kind of hate that?
Yeah, I didn't think about it that way. I like the inconvenience, but I'm understandably a weirdo. But there is something about just like, especially when I'm watching, like, and I keep going back to Lord of the Rings, but like when you're watching them, and it's like, you've got to go do the, you know, you're at the midway point, you've got to go take the DVD out and put in DVD number 2.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's kind of fun. I get to take a little break. Maybe it's a good time to go get a snack, go to the bathroom, whatever. Like, that's such a goofy thing, but it is, mm-hmm. It is honestly, like, it's kind of nice.
Oh, yeah. There's a really good moment on the Tom Petty album Full Moon Fever. If you are listening to it on CD or digitally, it's like a 10-second track in the middle that is basically like, hey, so you're listening to this on CD, but everyone who has it on vinyl and cassette, they're getting up right now to flip it over. And so this is just kind of filler to give you a similar experience to them. And then the next song starts and it's like, oh, that's fun. Like just kind of recognizing like, yeah, there's definitely some inconvenience to it or just a slightly different experience. Yeah. I don't fully know where it started. If it's continuing because everyone else is doing it. My theory on where it started is people wanting to get away from, I think specifically Spotify is where I first saw it, was I saw a lot of people online talking about getting MP3 players again because they wanted to just listen to music and not have ads and not have the Joe Rogan podcast recommended to them by an algorithm. It's like very much like an unplug thing. If that got us to people wanting to collect movies again, I'm all for it. Again, no idea where it's going as a movement. Not sure how those habits are going to mesh. I don't know that I've observed a cultural reversion before, even if it's not widespread in this way. But I think it's cool that it's happening, is what I'll say.
Yeah.
And also, like, saving stuff from landfills. I just saw that. I put that on the notes because there's a lot of old equipment. It does still work and it can still do the thing and still play the games and play the music and all that stuff. And people are just like chucking it because it's old. Why would I still want that? And it's like, because it still works. Like, why would you get rid of it? And I know that I'm weird because I kept my iPod from high school and then fixed it up when I decided I wanted to use it again. But yeah, I think it's helpful that there's something that is keeping plastic out of landfills. Just collect movies until we know how to dissolve discs without leaving plastic. Yeah. And then you can stop collecting. But I think that's all I've got. Not like any profound realizations. It was just good to talk through the movement and the benefits and the negatives and all that stuff with you. But do you have any closing thoughts?
No, I just think it's interesting that, like, ultimately, you know, why are people collecting physical media? There's a bunch of reasons. And I kind of like that there's not like a firm answer. You know what I mean? I like that there's not like a, mm-hmm. This is definitely why people are doing this. This is definitely why, because I think that's what makes it, it's so fascinating to hear why different people do it different ways. Like, I now plan on asking people that I know, like, especially if I know they have physical stuff, like, why do you do that? Like, I'm just curious. And I think that's, it's nice when there's not like a black and white, this is why this thing is, you know, the way it is. So I think it's fascinating to, even just as we're talking about it, thinking of so many different ways that we wouldn't have thought about otherwise.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I got it. Now I know a couple of my friends have started collecting again, so I should talk to them and be like, hey, tell me about this. Like, what was the tipping point for you? What movie could you not stream that made you say, fuck it, I need to collect movies again?
Yeah, exactly.
Because it was something, I feel like everyone has that thing that when they realize it's not available, they're just like, well, then I just have to go to the store because I'm not going to do this. Take ownership of your media, take ownership of your experience. That would be my big thing here. And also just like collect stuff. It's fun. Be environmentally friendly about it. Get it used. A lot of movies are available used. I think that does it for this week. If you listening at home want more, we do have it. But Why Though is on Blue Sky at butwhytho.net, and you can subscribe to our newsletter, which is free, or donate, which is money, by going to butwhytho.net/support. Everything that you give goes towards keeping the site going, making content that you can enjoy, paying our writers, all that good stuff. So anything you can do is appreciated. Kyle, thank you for joining me. It's always great talking with you, and thank you at home for listening. We'll see you next week.